Give me a quick second. I put on my glasses and everything got worse. So, you know, I know some of you that wear them all the time. You're familiar with that, what happens with that. Good morning. We're going to be in Mark chapter 5. If you have your Bible with you, if you're studying along with us on Facebook or you're watching this after the fact, we're going to be reading and studying from Mark 5 and tailing off a little bit into chapter 6. So Mark chapter 5 is an interesting account because it's quite a bit more detailed than some of the other healing accounts. Some of the healing accounts or the demons being cast out accounts, they're very brief. They're just kind of, this is what happened and we go on, kind of like Peter's mother-in-law. She has a fever, he lifts her up, and then that's sort of that. But with these three stories that we find in chapter 5 and then the additional one at the beginning of chapter 6, we get a little bit of the conversation, a little bit more of the detail. The point of the gospel at this point is still the same. Okay, if you had to say we've been studying now for a few weeks and we've been reading through Mark, what would you say is his first main point? What's Mark trying to show his audience, first and foremost?
That Jesus is who he says he is.
Okay. It's in the opening line of the book, right? The Gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, it says. And so, Mark's proving that point. The entire Gospel proves the point of who Mark is, but at least up through Mark 8, and through the middle of Mark 8, we have more of the miracle side of things. Okay, nearly all of the miracles recorded in Mark occur up to chapter 8. Okay, there's like 24, I believe it is, recorded miracles in Mark. And they are trying to prove the point that Jesus is not only the Son of God, but Jesus is the King. Okay, he is an authoritative figure. He's someone who speaks differently from the scribes. He speaks differently from the Jewish leaders. He's preaching the Word of God as if he wrote it, you might say, which is true. And it's going to sound quite odd to them to hear that. We're going to be in Mark 5, beginning in verse 1. Now, as we've done with our studies, we are going to begin by reading through. You'll notice that the readings are a bit shorter, but they cover less ground sort of within the story. The first story, the Gerasene demoniac, really goes from verses 1 through 20. So we're splitting that up just for ease of sort of sharing the load here. And then if you would like to follow along on our screen and be reading along with us, that'd be fine. If you would do as I'm doing and silence that. Show of hands if you want to pick up in the next part of the reading, and then we'll just go through and hear the text out loud. I'll begin in Mark 5 and verse 1, and I'll continue down through verse 5. Mark 5 and verse 1, they came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes. And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. He lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him any more, not even with a chain, for he had often been bound with shackles and chains. But he wrenched the chains apart, and he broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying out and cutting himself with stones. Okay, yes, verse 6 through 13, and you'll take the next one, all right?
And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and fell down before him. And crying out with a loud voice, he said, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you, by God, do not torment me." For he was saying to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" He replied, "My name is Legion, as we are many." And he begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now a great herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him, saying, "Send us to the pigs, let us enter them." So he gave them permission, and the unclean spirits came out and entered the pigs. And the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and drowned in the sea.
Okay.
And their herdsmen ran away and reported it in the city and out in the country. And the people came to see what it was that had happened. And they came to Jesus and observed a man who had been demon Go home to your people and report to them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy on you. And he went away and began to proclaim in Decapolis what great things Jesus had done for him, and everyone marveled.
All right, very good. Before the next reading, you'll notice that the account of the woman with the issue of blood is actually in the middle of the story of Jairus. So just note that as we kind of read through. It's not two, it's kind of all part of the same thing. Okay, 21 to 34. Yes, sir.
When Jesus had crossed over in the boat to the other side, a large crowd gathered around him, and so he stayed by the seashore. One of the synagogue officials named Jairus came up, fell at his feet, and reported earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Please come and lay your hands on her so that she will get well and live." And he went off with him, and a large crowd was following him and pressing him. A woman who had had a hemorrhage for 12 years and had endured much at the hands of many physicians, and had spent all that she had and was not helped at all, but rather had grown worse. After hearing about Jesus, she came up in the crowd behind him and touched his clothes, for she thought, "If I just touch his garments, I will get well." Immediately, the flow of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her affliction. Immediately, Jesus, perceiving in himself that the power proceeding from him had gone forth, turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garment?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing in on you. You say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see the woman who had done this. But the woman, fearing and trembling, aware of what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well.
Okay. 35 through the end of the chapter. Okay.
Okay. While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Overhearing what they had said, Jesus told him, "Don't be afraid, just believe." And he did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the house of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion, with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "What are all the commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him, and went in where the child was. I'm sorry, my glasses are falling.
It's all right.
Okay. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Tabitha, the woman," yeah, that's it, "which means little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. And this they were completely astonished. He gave strict order not to let anyone know about this, and told them to give her something to eat.
Okay. I saw you for first six verses, chapter six. Go ahead.
He went away from there and came to his hometown, and his disciples followed him. And on the Sabbath he began to teach in the synagogue, and many who heard him were astonished, to say, "Where did this man get these things? What is the wisdom given to him? How are such mighty works done by his hands? Is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary, and the brother of James, Joseph, and Judas, and Simon? And are not his sisters here with us?" And they took offense at him. And Jesus said to them, "A prophet is not without honor, except in his hometown and among them his relatives, and in his own household, and he could do no mighty work there, except that he laid hands on a few sick people and healed them. And he marveled because of their unbelief, and he went about among the village teaching."
Okay, and then finally 7 to 13. All right, go ahead.
And he called the 12 to himself and began to send them out 2 by 2, and gave them power over unclean spirits. He commanded them to take nothing for the journey except a staff, no bag, no bread, no copper in their money belts, but to wear sandals and not to put on two tunics. And he He also said to them, in whatever place you enter a house, stay there till you depart from that place. And whoever will not receive you nor hear you, when you depart from there, shake off the dust under your feet as a testimony against them. Surely I say to you, it will be more tolerable for Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. So they went out and preached that people should repent, and they cast out many demons, and anointed with oil many who were sick, and healed them.
Okay. Very good. Mark 5, 1 through 6, 13. Again, not very many stories in this section. Let's just summarize and go over what we've read so far. If we were in a Bible study, I would ask someone the very same thing. Okay, what happens between verses 1 and 20? Just give me a brief, maybe a one-line or two-line answer. What happens first in chapter 5? Okay. There was a demon-possessed man, a very seriously possessed and very badly affected demon-possessed man that Jesus heals, and then the man does what? Right. He's told to go tell others, and he does. And prior to that, he wants to follow Jesus. I love in that account there is I love patterns. You know this. I love when the text sort of summarizes itself. That story begins with Jesus getting out of the boat, and it ends with him getting into the boat. Did you notice that as you read through? Just those little markers that kind of show you, okay, here's the picture, here's the scene that you need to see. Okay, what happens right after that? Beginning in verse 21. All right, so now not just... Word is spreading, and this crowd that follows him around. And you'll notice as we move through Mark, the crowd is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Okay, and this happens pretty consistently up through chapter 8. Okay, and we start talking about other things there. But the crowd goes from not allowing him to eat because there's so many, there's no room at the door of his house, it says in chapter 2, to now they're following him around the sea. Okay, he keeps crossing the sea, and they keep going around the sea following him. Try and get to him as best they can. So when the multitude comes up, who comes out of the crowd and who is named?
Jairus,
okay, however we want to say it. he's an unusual figure that comes up and he asks Jesus a very serious request. I'm going to spend some time this morning in our lesson looking at this text, but out of Luke's gospel, Luke chapter 8. The story is repeated there. It's repeated in Matthew as well. But we're going to look at this account over in Luke's gospel. Okay, so I hate to really dive super deep into this. And you normally wouldn't with a study like this. You would ask what happens and you kind of go through. In the middle of that story, we sort of have an aside. Okay, right about verse 24, 25. Okay. During the process of Jesus and Jairus going to his house, what happens?
From the crowd, a woman that had a hemorrhage for 12 years believed that if she could just only touch his garment, she would be healed.
And she does. Okay. One of the more unusual versions of Jesus' healing here, because there's no questions involved. There's really no dialogue beforehand. She just walks up in this mass of people, believing that, well, if I could just touch his garment, I could be healed. We don't have any precedent of that, at least recorded. We know later on that people got the story, because people show up to Jesus wanting to touch the hem of his garment later. And I think it's based on this account. What does this tell you about Jesus that she touches his robe and then he perceives that power has gone out of him? What does that tell you about him?
Well, Mark 5 and verse 30 is one of the most interesting passages to me that is. I still don't fully understand this. It's been years I've studied it, but there's some... I come away with the definite idea that there's a connection between the healings that Jesus does and there's power it's not just something that willy-nilly happens, but he perceived it when something happened. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's very unique that we get this inside glimpse, kind of that there's power of Jesus involved in their healing.
Yeah. I don't ever want to say I'm happy that someone's confused, but I'm with you, and I think that's appropriate. If we understood everything there was to know about Jesus and his mind and what he does, then he wouldn't be God. He has to be on another level, and he is. He's on a level above us, beyond our understanding. There are parts that we do understand, the parts he reveals and explains to us. But there are just some things about Jesus we're not going to get. I think there are some lessons from this. If you're studying this gospel and you're hearing this and you're trying to figure out who Jesus is, and then you hear, let's just imagine that you haven't grown up hearing it or you haven't been hearing it for a long time, and you hear that this man was so powerful that someone touched his clothes and was healed of a 12-year illness, what would that tell you about him? What impression would that leave? Yeah. He's way beyond any prophet or just the so-called healers of today. Or he's even, if we go to the royal route, he's beyond any king that ever lived. No king could do this. Henry VIII couldn't, loft his massive robe over somebody and they'd be healed. It didn't work like that. But this man can. He is so filled up with power. And then if you want to think about, there's references in the Old Testament to things being made holy by contact. Okay, Isaiah 6. Isaiah's mouth is touched and then he's atoned for. All right, Jeremiah has a similar experience. There's all sorts of things you could say about that, but if you're reading this, trying to figure out who Jesus is, you learn from this, he is different. He's beyond anything we could imagine. This is all going on, and in the process, verse 35, you get the terrible news. Again, we're going to talk more about it in just a few minutes. He then does something else that's incredible. He goes to Jairus' house, takes a few selected people in with him, and then what? What does he do? She's not dead. She's asleep. Did they know she was dead? Yeah. Compared to Jesus, we don't know much, but we can tell when a person's dead. I mean, I think that's fair. But not to him. What does that tell you about Jesus? Yeah, that's beyond even healing, isn't it? There's healing, there's medicine, and then there's raising the dead. Those are two different things. Right? Modern medicine cannot raise the dead. Cannot even prevent death from happening. But this man says, get up, and the dead person gets up. Jesus is beyond anything we've ever heard of. He goes back home in Nazareth. What happens there? Okay. Yeah. Where does he think he's come from? We know him. We know his family. We know his father's occupation, likely Jesus' occupation. How does he get in here taking all this wisdom? It's interesting. Their astonishment is not just theirs. This happens to a lot of people in the gospel. Where did he get these things? What is the wisdom given to him? How are such mighty works done by his hands? What would Mark answer that? How would he answer it? Those are valid questions, aren't they? How would he answer it?
He would probably go back into the Old Testament, what they would have at their disposal as Jews. Mm-hmm. And he would describe the Old Testament reading about who is to come. Mm-hmm. And if you go back in Isaiah and other places, it tells you very, very pinpoint accurate who is coming. And then he would relate that.
Okay, so you can have the, well, appropriately, he's in a synagogue, so he could have gone back and studied, of course, who he was through the old law. What's the point of Mark's gospel? What's he trying to prove?
In a sense, that's what Mark's doing all the way through the gospel. I mean, you know, we say it was written in Greek, so it probably was the Gentiles, but still, they would have known something about the Jewish people that lived among them, and what they believed, and he's trying to say, this man may be a Jew, but he's got more power than any leader you've ever known.
Yeah. Go ahead. He's going to prepare to send people to go with his message. Okay, we're going to talk about their environment in just a second. Where did this man get these things? What is the wisdom given to him? How are such mighty works done by his hands? Yes, sir.
Mark starts out, Mark 1:1. This is the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And then it's kind of like peeling the onion and layers.
Yep.
He starts adding on to that. Piling over there, piling more over there. I get busy reading this. This happens so fast.
Yes.
It's just like, you know, what's next out of my bag to tell you about? It's just over and over and over. And it's that harkens back to, let me tell you about the Son of God.
Yep.
And he just goes on to prove it so many different ways.
I like that phrase of piling on. You know, after a while, you're like, okay, we get it. You know? But listen, but a claim so outrageous as Jesus is the Son of God, that needs lots of proof. That needs lots of proof, repeated proof, lots of witnesses, different places, different people, different types of healing, different arenas that his power is demonstrated in. And in a lot of ways, chapter 5 is one of the most astounding. You know, he commands hordes of demons. He heals what would probably, I would consider, terminal illness, right? This is something she hasn't been able to be healed from. She would have certainly died from it, I would assume. Then raises a girl from the dead. That's beyond what we would expect. Yes, sir?
I think particularly in this book, we have a synopsis that Jesus is proving he has control and understanding about the entire universe, both physical, spiritual, unseen, seen, everything that has to do with anything we know, Jesus knows about and has demonstrated he has power over.
Absolutely.
Piling on of the evidence about the authentic, how authentic he is.
Mm-hmm.
And people still don't believe.
That's exactly what it says in verse 6.
That is a common thread throughout history. Of
Gee.
God and his people, his creation. He shows us who he is. He documents who he is. Mm-hmm. And yet, some still won't believe.
Yep. In the face of overwhelming evidence, the Nazarites go, but I don't know, we know him. We know his family. We know his father's profession. I don't know about him. With everything that surrounds it, it feels really, you know, silly to say, but that was their answer. We know him. We know where he's from.
It's an interesting feature that the crowd, the multitudes, are always emphasized, and you know, it's got a multifaceted aspect of that, but one of those that you need. Mark keeps telling his people all of this happened with so many people around. Mm-hmm. And you know, what do we see today? Well, this miracle, so-called, was done in the deepest, darkest parts of the rainforest with nobody around to corroborate it, but come back and believe me because I tell you now. It's just so flipped. If you want to see a miracle, do it in front of, you know, 2,000 people crowded around and let everybody tell them. There's nothing, this Son of God is something.
Yeah. Jesus, I'm going to mention this because we're low on time. Jesus, if you think about power and proving who he is and demonstrating that, Jesus does one better than just doing all of this. What would the one better be? Well, he did himself, but then he took regular people, gave them some of that power, and then they went and did it. That's another area altogether. To say, okay, I have this power, I have come from God, and he did, and he proves it. But then to say, all right, I'm going to designate these 12 individuals with some of that power. You know, here you go. And then they went out and they did those things. That's what it says when they were sent out. They were given, verse 7 of chapter 6, authority over unclean spirits. They go out in verse 12, they proclaim the same message he'd been proclaiming. Repent. Remember, that's the first word of the gospel. And then you see, they cast out many demons. And verse 13, they anointed with oil many who were sick and healed them. They certainly weren't Jesus, but Jesus had the power to take some of himself and put it on them and say, go and do as I'm doing. It's astounding. This is not the version of Jesus you hear people talk a lot about. You know, it's a misinformed Jesus is what you hear often in the world. That's why it's so important we are reading the gospel with folks so that they can hear and see and listen to this is who he really was. This is what he really did. Throw out all the misinformation, what their, you know, spiritual religious advisor has told them. Here's what it is. Here's who he is. We can cut through a lot of the noise if we just get down to the text and read it. Let it say what it's going to say. All right, last thought before we... Well, I think we got 5 minutes. That has messed me up since I've been here. We got a five-minute bell. And then, see, when I was in school, the bell rang, everybody left. So, you know, it's like, bye. Go ahead. Several, yeah. And then he's over, then he lets them go. And it terrifies the herdsmen. We talked a little bit about that on Wednesday night, too. Okay. All right. Something that I want you to think about. In the first story, the Gadarene demoniac, did you notice when you read through that all three parties in that story addressed Jesus the same way? What I mean by that is kind of the same verb is used to address him, especially when they come to ask him something. Let me show you what I mean by that. What did the demons do in verse 10 when they came to Jesus and asked their question? What does it say? They what? They begged him. Okay, very good. What do the herdsmen do in verse 17, and the townspeople? How? They begged him, right? This isn't just, hey, you know, do you mind? This is, now how did the demoniac, the healed man, how did he ask Jesus if he could go with him? What does it say? They begged him. So the legion of demons begged Jesus for permission, the herdsmen and townspeople begged Jesus to leave, and the healed man begs Jesus to follow him. What does that tell you about Jesus?
They're recognizing that he is some sort of authority.
Yeah.
They can't do the
stand-alone. Yeah. No one's giving him instructions. No one's saying, hey, I'm going to go over to these pigs and I need you to be... No. This is begging. This tells you something about him. That everybody in the story would recognize their need to beg him for permission to do what they need to do. Even in asking him to leave, they're begging him to go. Okay. This tells you something about Jesus. This is more than just the, you know, Jesus is okay with my life, Jesus, that you hear preached right now. This is the Jesus is Lord and Savior version that we know. The one that is begged for things. Because it's appropriate. Okay. Psalm 2 is another good place to see that picture of Jesus. That picture of the Messiah being somebody that you need to beg permission to do things. Psalm 2 gives you a good image of that. Okay. Before and after. If you were here Wednesday night, we talked about this briefly, so let's test our memory. Okay. Before his healing, the Gerizim demoniac was three general things. Number one, Luke's gospel tells us he was naked. Okay. What else was he? Just speaking generally. Before he was healed, he was naked. He was what? He was incredibly strong. He had that unnatural sort of strength, and he was out of control. Okay, he was insane. And he's running about all over the place. He's lost control of himself. Kind of all those three things together. Nobody can bind him. Shows you they tried, okay, to handle him. What was he afterwards? Three things that get details in Mark's gospel. He was what afterwards? And in his right mind. Before, you can see what he was, and then after, he's seated, clothed, and in his right mind. What does that tell you about Jesus? Jesus is a powerful healer that wants, he changes people for the better. People are better off after contact with him, no matter how bad they were in the beginning. Good point to make. All right, we're going to start worship in about 10 minutes. Thank you guys for helping us in our discussion and our reading. Next week, if you have the schedule, it's on there. If you don't have the schedule, they're on the table in the back. It'll be Mark 6:14 through that first major section of chapter 8, okay, through verse 30. All right, look forward to talking about it with you all then, reading through it.